This is a CBC podcast. Keep track of your game with CBC Sports. With headlines, clips, schedules, and news, our sports portal will tell you what you missed and what not to miss. Check it out at cbc.ca/sports.
Hello, I'm Stuart McLean, and this is the Vinyl Cafe. So I don't like to think of myself as one of those, well, people who complain about the world today. I don't generally think about the old days as the good old days. Some of those days that have passed, were, no doubt about it, good days. But some of these days are pretty great, too. And I'd like to think that the days that are coming, our tomorrows, might be just as good, maybe even better. I like change, generally. And generally, I think the world is getting better. I think many of the changes we've seen, particularly some of the technological changes, are for the better. I like my computer. I like email and my iPod and my cell phone. I wouldn't give up the internet for all the tea in China. These things have all enhanced my life. But the other day I was out for a walk, and at one point while I was walking, I realized I was walking across the street from a mailman, or letter carrier, as we're supposed to call them these days, and I noticed that this letter carrier wasn't stopping at every house. How different, I thought, from my boyhood, when we got mail delivered not once, but twice a day. And how different from the days before me, when mail whizzed around the city so fast and efficiently that you could post an invitation to dinner with the morning mail and get a reply in the afternoon, with plenty of time left to go to the grocery store before your dinner guests arrived. I still get my fair share of mail. I look forward to it, and I'm disappointed if my letter carrier misses a day. But the dinner invitations are few and far between, and it's a red letter day indeed when I get a handwritten letter from a friend with or without an invitation. So one of the things that I like about the season that we're in right now, this holiday season, is that it's one of the few times of the year when people correspond in the old-fashioned way, just to say, "Hello, I'm thinking about you, I miss you." This is, more than any other, the time of year when we think of others, and when we stop long enough to do more than think, the time of year when we're most likely to sit down and write a card or letter. It's also the time of the year when those who live far from home find their thoughts turning homeward. We've received some wonderful letters from Canadians all over the world these past few months, Canadians who are living in foreign lands because of love, work, or adventure. And I thought that today on the show, because of the season, I'd share some of those letters with you. I have a few of my favorites here with me right now, and I've contacted the people who sent them and received their permission to read them to you. So that's what we're going to do on today's show. In honor of everyone living abroad wishing they were home for the holidays, today it's Letters from Away. We're going to start now, and we're going to start with this letter from Nyree Stevens. "Dear Stuart," writes Nyree, "I grew up just outside St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador. I love my hometown, but like many young people from Atlantic Canada, I ended up leaving home to find work. Most of my friends ended up in places like Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, or Fort McMurray. I ended up off the west coast of Africa on a ship in the Atlantic Ocean. It's actually amazing how many Maritimers I run into over here. I guess that once you have to leave your home, Africa's no further than Alberta. The drill ship where I work is difficult to describe. I could tell you its function or its size or where it was built, but I can't express what it's like to live here for half the year. A safety trainer once told us, you may think that what I described would never work in the real world, but this out here on this ship is not the real world, not even close. If I were a writer, I could fill an entire book with stories just about the food we eat. There are at least 180 people on board at any time. They come from up to 50 countries, and each person, from the captain to the dishwasher, is vital to the ship. To live and work here, you must treat everyone with respect and courtesy. The language and cultural differences make for a very unique community. I'm one of only a few Canadians on board, and the fact that I'm Canadian has been responsible for some memorable moments. One of my favorites happened on a morning last May. I was walking from my cabin to my workshop, and a Lithuanian, a Latvian, and a Russian each stopped to offer me condolences. I began to think that something horrible had happened at home. But when I got to the workshop, I saw what they were talking about. There, on the computer screen, were big letters reading, "Russia beats Canada, 2-1. I'd never realized it before working here, far from home, but CBC Radio has been a huge part of my life for years. So, armed with podcasts, downloads, and CDs, I began to bring a little Canadian radio to my workshop. I didn't think anyone would notice. I was wrong. I've discovered that the CBC has a way of highlighting everything that makes us a unique country. I listened to C'est la vie and had to explain that, yes, I do understand the French that was just spoken, but no, I don't speak French. I had to explain that this is a skill you develop when you hear and read everything twice, first in English and then in French. One interview on DNTO caused a coworker to ask me if, in Canada, a woman isn't required to take her husband's name. While listening to the radio series Afghanida, a man asked me, "Do you even have a military?" The only thing that everyone seems to agree on is that Canada is too cold. Even the Russians and Norwegians say that. Well, maybe. Nevertheless, every week or so, someone asks me about visiting or immigrating to Canada. People love that Canadians can and will laugh at themselves. And while many of the comments and questions I receive are pure curiosity, some of them contain a hint of envy. I know my neighbors at home. I can ask a stranger for directions. I understand what my politicians are saying most of the time. And when I leave my house, I'm not afraid of being shot. And on and on. And I guess I'm writing today to send my greetings to all the Canadians working abroad. A hello to all the CBC listeners around the world, Canadian or otherwise. Thanks, Stuart. That letter came to us from Nyree Stevens, formerly of St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador. Nyree sent that letter from a ship in the Atlantic Ocean somewhere off the coast of West Africa. We have another letter here in the Vinyl Cafe inbox from Africa. This one came to us from Blair Henry in Botswana. "Hello, Vinyl Cafe," writes Blair. "First of all, thank you for podcasting your show. Here in Botswana, my family listens regularly. My wife, kids, and I have been to see some of your live shows and have come to feel that Morley and Dave are really neighbors of ours rather than fictional characters. I am writing, however, with a story. When I was a child in Canada, my father called a family meeting. It was a serious discussion with a purpose that would shape our recreational activities for a lifetime. He had a question for us. The question was, skiing or hockey? Dad told us we couldn't do both, and he wanted us as a family to do what we wanted to do. As the baby of the family, I really didn't have much input. I was still pushing a chair around the community rink. I had not even arrived at hockey age. The year before this discussion, the family had started to ski. We all loved it. So the decision was made. No hockey for us. The Henry family were skiers. And so for the next 20 years, I drove right past hockey rinks. And while I never played, I did notice the plywood boards and great snow piles around the perimeters. Images deeply embedded in my memory. But I had a misspent youth shooting moguls instead of pucks. I didn't put a pair of skates on after that meeting until after I'd bought a house for myself and found it had a skating pond in the front yard. And so I finally came to understand the excruciating pain that travels from toes to heel and experience the ecstasy that comes when you take off your skates and slip a steaming foot into a snow boot. After some time, I became a decent enough skater, and I took up inline skating. I even got an inline instructor certification. Sure, I skated a lot, but I had a dirty little secret. I'd never held a hockey stick while on skates, in line or ice. Often I felt like I was the only Canadian who had never played the game. This August, my wife Jude, my son Will, and I arrived in Mon, Botswana. This is a town on the edge of the Kalahari Desert, and it's as hot as it comes. Today, the temperature should reach about 42 Celsius. It is hot here, so hot that it's difficult to get ice in your drink, so forget about a skating rink. But they do have one thing that I hadn't expected. I was driving with the son of a friend on a series of errands one day. Madison's a confident 12-year-old who's grown up in the bush tracking wild dogs and other predators. One of our stops was to pick up something from a local carpenter. As we approached, Madison said, "You're going to like Sandy, and being a Canadian, you're going to love his place." I asked why. Madison said, "I'd have to wait and see." And then we pulled up to Sandy's, and I saw a set of bleachers and the unmistakable 4-foot wall that makes up the boards of a hockey rink. I got out of the car and went to check out the rink and found a regulation-sized cement pad with nets at each end. You could see it had been built and added to over the course of many years. The cement was riddled with cracks, and the lights not quite bright enough, though probably more because of the swarms of mosquitoes around them than the intensity of the lamps. Nevertheless, it was perfect. And if you didn't think to bring inline skates to Botswana, well, Sandy and his wife Ruth have been collecting them, and they have a size that will fit you. And so, this past Tuesday, I joined a group of men and women from Canada, the United States, South Africa, England, and France for my first ever game of hockey. Spouses and kids cheered from the stands. Finally, I was a real Canadian. And to think, it happened in the middle of the Kalahari Desert. That letter came to us from Blair Henry of Mon, Botswana. I'm Stuart McLean, and today on The Vinyl Cafe, we're reading Letters from Away. We get a lot of letters from people who listen to The Vinyl Cafe all around the world. Today on the show, we're sharing some of our favorite letters from away. Our next comes from Carrie Clark. "Dear Stuart," writes Carrie, "I've been meaning to write for a while. We're a Canadian family with mostly Anglo-Saxon heritage, but 10 months ago, we moved to China. We came on an impulse that it was the right thing to do, just that. I was to teach English at a university, my husband to study Chinese. Our plan was he would eventually open a business here. Not everything has gone according to that plan. Adjusting to a new culture has been difficult at times, especially for our children. Our son is 7 years old, our daughters are 5 and almost 3. Before moving here, we lived in Toronto, so living next to people who are different from us is not an entirely new experience. At our home in Toronto, our neighbors were Turkish, Greek, Italian, Portuguese, and West Indian, and I'm probably forgetting a few at that. So probably it's the adjustment to the language and surroundings that have been more the issue than the culture. Since coming to China, we've had some interesting conversations with our children about what it means to be Canadian. They're young, so their understanding of culture is not fully formed, but they're beginning to understand what makes a Canadian, Canadian. One of our family traditions in Toronto was that every Saturday morning we'd gather in the kitchen, sit down to a plate stacked with pancakes and real maple syrup, turn on the radio, and listen to the Vinyl Cafe. Shortly after arriving, my husband discovered the Vinyl Cafe podcast and a place to buy genuine Canadian maple syrup. So our Saturday morning tradition has continued. I'm not sure if my children are your youngest fans, but I'm grateful for the kinds of family-friendly broadcasts you produce and that you've given us a little of Canada that we can share with our children in this faraway land. Thank you." That letter came to us from Carrie Clark in China. I'm Stuart McLean, and you're listening to The Vinyl Cafe, broadcast on CBC Radio 1 and 2 in Canada, on selected public radio stations in the United States, on Sirius Satellite 137 across North America, and via podcast and in real time on the World Wide Web at vinylcafe.com and cbc.ca. Today on the show, we're reading letters that have come into the Vinyl Cafe mailbox from people who listen to this program in faraway places. This next one comes from Canadian Leah Davis Edwards, who lives in Sudan. "Dear Mr. McLean," writes Leah, "Sudan is an incredible place. It's war-torn and barren, dusty and poor. It's one of those places that you can't describe even with photos or videos, neither of which you're allowed to take without a permit. And we never bothered to get one. You have to see it. Now, we don't live in Darfur, like most people assume, and we're not affected by the conflict in the south either. We live in a haven in hell, at the confluence of the white and blue Nile rivers, in Khartoum. We are here as teachers. And like many teachers who work overseas, we work at an international school that caters to the children of expatriates. Usually these are children of UN, embassy, and NGO workers. In our case, it also includes the children of the Sudanese elite who are fortunate enough to be able to afford a fantastic education. If you check Google Earth, our school is the largest green patch in Khartoum. That's our soccer pitch. It's also the only blue square. That's our swimming pool, an oasis in this bizarre place. While we work long hours at the school to give these children the best education and experiences we can, we have grown accustomed to the idiosyncrasies of the Sudanese way. And I think it's important that I give another picture of a place that has been so poorly publicized. I teach the humanities, after all, and I expect my students to learn all sides of any story. First, there's the development. When we arrived 2 years ago, we were given directions to the city of 4 million that included phrases like, turn right at the traffic light. When we naively asked, which light, people laughed at us. There only was one traffic light, and there were no street signs, no maps. Our GPS software was sanctioned, and the guidebooks were useless. Now there are 7 traffic lights on 1 4-kilometer stretch of road. Last week, we found ourselves standing on the rooftop of an apartment building. I was there talking to a friend, a British fellow who's been here 21 years. He took a look around at the rebar sticking up from the hundreds of rooftops around us, the airport, the paved roads, and then he said, "This was all barren desert when we got here." Khartoum is changing, and it's changing fast. Nothing is built well. Nothing is fixed properly, but everything is still standing. And that's a side of Sudan that the world doesn't see. The world doesn't see the adventures of driving here, driving when you're stuck between a donkey and a double-length, fully loaded, flatbed Mercedes truck that's hauling 1 million Coke bottles to the retail outlets, and no, not corner stores, but to women who have stands on the side of the roads and who have branched out from tea to selling coke as well. The world does not see the excitement amongst the people when a road is paved, or the first real grocery store is opened, or the stunning serenity of the sand dunes and pyramids, or the fences covered in plastic bags from the littering masses, or the breathtaking sunrises, or the heavy heat. My husband and I don't feel that we belong here. But we don't feel we're ready to return to Canada either. Our stay has made us question who we are and what we believe, and it has made us more proud and thankful to be Canadian. Sincerely, Leah Davis Edwards, formerly of Vancouver, Lennoxville, Ottawa, Kingston, Switzerland, Singapore, and now Sudan. Today on the show, we've read 4 letters sent into the Vinyl Cafe mailbox from Canadians who live away from home. We've received dozens of letters like this over the past decade. David Lawson wrote to us from Doha, Qatar, to tell us that he has been listening to the show for 4 years and listening keeps him connected to Canada. It makes our bizarre desert life more bearable, wrote David. Sarah McGinty wrote to us from the African country of Lesotho. Sarah didn't listen to the show when she lived in Canada, but says she started downloading the podcast when she moved away. Since that time, I have been hooked. The quintessential Canadian element of the show makes me a little less homesick. I'm not sure why I wanted to read these to you today. Maybe because I travel so much myself. And because I'm away so much, feel a certain fellowship with the people who write to me about the joy and sadness of life on the lam. Most of my travels pale in comparison to the travels we heard about today. Most of my stories are pretty tame. That's because most of my travels are here at home. Yet, as Nyree Stevens from St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador pointed out in her letter, once you leave home, Africa's not that much further than Alberta. Leavings always bring up big feelings, wistfulness, regret, melancholy, thoughtfulness. All sorts of things come into view when you see things with faraway eyes. So even though my travels are tame, I do know a little about what it's like to miss the old familiar places and feel the lonely ache that comes calling when home is far away. We all do. We know it even if we don't travel at all. Because home is an idea of the heart as much as anything. And whenever the heart is involved, heartbreak is only a beat away. The people we heard from today are having wonderful and important experiences, but their letters remind us of the important experiences we all have at home, and that life is rich wherever we live it. We are lucky to live where we do, here, in this country. And maybe what I wanted to do was simply say that, and at the same time give a shout-out to all the Canadians listening abroad who, through their faraway eyes, make things clearer here. Hello. We know you miss us. We miss you, too. Thanks for listening. And thanks this week to Greg DeClute and Ori Joseph for work above and beyond the call of duty, to Sweeney for the technical assistance, to David Amer, who's the founding producer of the Vinyl Cafe, Louise Curtis, who's the production assistant, Julie Penner, who's the music producer, Meg Masters, the long-suffering story editor, and a Vinyl Cafe producer, Jess Milton. I'm Stuart McLean in Canada. So long for now.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.